Welcome to Happy News Network.
We are here to brighten your week while you take a break from doom scrolling.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Shayna.
We wanted to brighten social media, so we decided to make a podcast all about happy news.
Join us as we discuss our happy news finds.
Shayna, what is your happy news this week?
Okay, it's 2 months later happy news, but in December, I got to stage manage a virtual short play festival, and it was just a really lovely 6-7 days with Luna Stages in West Orange, New Jersey. They did a super short play festival. So there were all these different panels throughout the day of anywhere from, I think, 4 to 6 short plays, like 10-page plays. And I got to stage manage a set of them, had a lovely, lovely time. And it just felt so good to be called a stage manager again.
Yeah, like to do what you trained to do.
In a fully new capacity. I mean, yeah. Virtual stage managing is not stage managing as I would call it. You're a Zoom camera off and on kind of gal. You're kind of more like an associate producer or associate director where you're like, I think her ring light needs to be adjusted. And that's the extent of what you can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was really nice.
Yeah. It's nice to use those, like that muscle memory kind of like,
oh yeah. It was so fun. And I was like, oh God, I almost forgot how much I hate making daily schedule templates because they're the same and yet they're different every time you make them. Every time. You're like, it's both exciting because you're like, I'm starting something new soon. And then you're like, I want that column to be 1/8 inch shorter. Oh my God.
Ah, yes. The little neuroses.
Yes. The things that make us tick. What is your happy news this week?
So in the new year, my partner and I decided to like go refined sugar-free and gluten-free, which we did when we first met. Like when we moved to Denver, I don't think I bought sugar for like 2 years. I didn't buy like white granulated sugar for 2 years. I just use natural sugars. But so we decided to do that again in the new year, and I just made some gluten-free biscuits that weren't garbage. So I'm taking the win. I'm loving that. I used cup for cup flour, gluten-free flour. So you just use it like normal flour, but it's gluten-free and it worked. I've made them before where like they end up really hard or they don't set right or they never rise, but these were actual biscuits. It was great.
We'll have to talk more about this at another date because I have tried some gluten-free cup for cup baking and it always turns out like a leaden brick. So
yeah. Yeah. It's tricky. And like the amount of flours that I have, like the different kinds of gluten-free flour I have in my cupboard, ridiculous. I think I actually have 3 different kinds, but this one kind actually worked. Brilliant.
Yeah. I have a couple different ones and it's all like all the recipes call for different ones too. Like some that are maybe a little more naturally sweet, want a coconut flour, some that are more maybe a biscuit, something a slightly less reliant on sugar sweetening are almond flour or a cup for cup or teff flour. So
yeah. It's crazy. This world of gluten-free baking, but
welcome to it.
I know.
Yeah. Well, you're such a good baker on a day-to-day basis that I feel like now that you understand how to make a biscuit, so now you don't have to focus on what is making a biscuit. You can focus on how do I make a gluten-free biscuit.
Right. Yeah. It's fun. And I have relatives that have been – that like are avid home bakers. One has like a small cupcake business. Well, it's kind of big now. Anyway, but like she does some gluten-free baking and just following her Instagram and like, hey, how do you do that? It's nice. It's fun. It's a fun time.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. So my first article this week, I talk a lot about climate change and how to, you know, help our planet stick around as long as we can. But there's this climate change writer who decided to take what he's learned over the years of writing about climate change and apply it to his life in every way you can possibly imagine. So he and his wife put solar panels on the roof of their home. Their boiler blew out, so they had to replace their boiler with a high efficiency boiler. They swapped out their air conditioner for one with a heat pump. And they had to buy a new car. So they bought an electric battery vehicle. They also live in Washington, D.C. And because of incentives, they're on track to save a ton of money after making these purchases. At the federal level, you can get incentives for just purchasing an electric vehicle and putting solar panels on your roof. So no matter where you live in the United States, you can get either you get a tax break or you get kind of like a credit, like a rebate mm-hmm. for buying certain things like an electric vehicle and solar panels. So they have that federally, but then also because they live in DC, DC has local incentives. So they have their federal tax credit and a local rebate for their new HVAC system. And after all is said and done, they spent $90,000 for these things, not all at once, obviously, but you know, as they could afford it, they spent $90,000 total on this new lifestyle, and they'll receive over $20,000 in tax breaks. And also wow. things like solar panels after 5 years end up paying for themselves. So like,
that's remarkable. That's
just incredible. Like this man writes about climate change all the time and was like, wait, there's something I can do about it. So I'm going to do it. And then I'm going to teach other people how it helped me. So anyway, looking for a tax
break. So neat. He literally put his money where his profession is. And they got really high rewards in terms of rebates and tax breaks because of local and federal. But maybe if they were only doing federal, it maybe would have been, let's say, a third to half of that. That's still to receive something back for doing the right thing is kind of nice. Because often it's just assumed that you should do the right thing for the sake of it, for the feeling good nature of it, and not for financial incentive. But those products, they are newer. They are newer technology. So they do run higher in terms of expense. And that's really great.
Yeah. And it's not like they were just like, get rid of everything and buy new things, because then they're just creating waste. They still have their old, they still have their old gas vehicle, but they needed another vehicle. So they bought an electric one. Their boiler went out. So they got a new high efficiency boiler. Like it all.
Yeah. When we redid our kitchen years and years ago, because we were redoing the floors, we'd had this like tile and hardwood floor mix thing. And we opted for a full cork floor because cork is more sustainable because the cork trees can grow back more quickly.
Quicker, yeah.
Yeah. And so they evidently at the time, I mean, this was like 15 years ago, it was seen as the more sustainable flooring option than just hardwood. And so we opted for cork, and there are differences. It does get dinged a little bit more easily, but at the same time, if you have to replace it, you feel less guilty. So,
right.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was, and it's incremental. So, and it's neat that as technology changes, I didn't know some of those things existed.
Yeah. Yeah. So fun stuff.
Sort of going to countries that are less developed than ours, in India, they have a lot of uncovered wells and ditches, and it poses a threat to animals, especially like elephants, because they're very migratory and they need expansive land to forage. So there's a well that didn't have a barrier, and it was obscured by bushes, and an elephant fell down it. And this is my next article, is the elephant got rescued. And so this rescue recovery has helped open up and renew the push to cover wells or create different safety walls so that they can be impeded less and less of these incidents happen. And okay, so let me just go into the story itself. After a dramatic 12 plus hour operation, a baby elephant was rescued after falling into a 50-foot well in Tamil Nadu, India. So local villagers notified authorities of a trapped animal, and they, to keep the elephant, you know, nourished, they dropped banana leaves down the well so that the elephant could eat. And it looks like during the rescue itself, so they used pipes to sort of pump water out of the well to make space and to, I guess, to drain it. And then the Indian Forest Reserve Service brought in a crane, and they strapped the elephant using what looked like ratchet straps or belts, like oversized straps, and they suspended it sort of sideways-ish, upside down-ish to safety. So there's a video of it. And it looks like they tied each leg individually and then tied like the two front legs together and the back two legs together. So it was less pressure on the limbs themselves. And the elephant sort of came out on his or her side. And the villagers were watching in this video and they were cheering once the elephant like made it onto, oops, I just hit the mic. Once they cheered, like once the elephant made it onto solid ground. I'm just so excited about the elephants making it out.
That's so cute.
Yeah. And doctors ensured that the elephant, so they sedated the elephant and took some of that stress out prior to the lifting. And they also monitored the elephant for 3 hours after, and it was very active, very healthy. And it was so cute. One of the people they interviewed said, credits to the elephant also for her will. It was so sweet. Like, credit goes to the elephant for being such a trooper. Yeah. And I don't know, who doesn't love a good animal feel good story?
Yeah. Oh, how cute. Oh, well, I'm glad that they're like doing something about it. They're not just like, okay, we rescued an elephant. They're like, we got to prevent this from ever happening again. That's great.
Yeah. There's a huge push to help reduce the number of incidents.
Yeah. That's great. Oh, yeah. Love that. See, we see a problem, we fix it in the moment, and then we try to fix it long term.
Yeah.
Love it. Here for it. I'm also going to another country. I'm headed over to Italy for this article. So the Colosseum, we can all picture the Colosseum, like the most visited tourist attraction in all of Italy. And now the Italian government has this new goal with a budget of $22.5 million. $22.5 million, that's a lot. But what they want to do, they want to turn it into a functioning concert venue again. Again, not like they'd ever hosted concerts, but like actually have crowds gather for an event at the Colosseum again, which blows my mind. So they want to install a retractable floor. So right now, if you look at pictures of the Colosseum, it doesn't have a floor. You just see all these walls. It kind of looks like a maze. And that's like, for us theater kids, that's like the green room and backstage area where the gladiators and, you know, the lions would like hang out in these rooms and then go through these tunnels to then go up onto the floor that no longer exists and battle to the death. So that's wild. That's not the plan. They're putting in this floor retractable so it can be open and people can still see this really intricate tunnel system with all these rooms and things. But if there's inclement weather, they can close the floor and protect it, because right now, just due to natural weathering, it's kind of falling apart. I mean, it's how many thousands of years old? Of course, it's falling apart, but they're hoping to preserve the walls, and having the floor again will also help it, the Colosseum, be used in the manner that it was intended, entertainment. And the goal is high culture, so concerts or live theater. So like, how cool that you could go to the Colosseum, and their goal to have this done is like, in 2 years. They want to have it done in 2023. Like, I cannot wait to be able to travel and maybe see a concert at the Colosseum. Excuse me. That's insane. That's incredible.
That's insane to me. So I just looked it up. The Colosseum was built between 70 and 80 AD. So this is darn near 2000 years old. The fact that it's still standing and you can walk around and visit it is remarkable.
Yeah. In any capacity. Yeah.
That's so cool. And it's neat. It sounds like they're doing not only like a restoration, but a modernization. So it's like a twofold project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's so really neat. Cool.
Now, are we going to take bets? Like, who's going to be the first megastar to host a concert there? Like, my guess is probably BTS or Ariana Grande.
Oh, but I feel like I would want it to be like Paul McCartney.
Paul and Elton, maybe like a dual concert. Done. I just broke Kristen.
Oh, wow. I would like empty my savings and my retirement account.
President of the Colosseum. Like, who's in charge of the Colosseum? Can we just get him on the phone?
Dear Italy.
So Time Magazine named its kid of the year. So 15-year-old Gitanjali Rao is the kid of the year for her water testing efforts. She's a Colorado teen. And so, yes, Kristen, you guys can go get coffee together. Can't do a brewery tour with her yet. So she her resume is remarkable for, and let alone the fact that she's 15. So she made the Forbes 30 under 30 list a few years ago at the age of 11, creating a device using carbon nanotube sensors to detect lead in water to help Flint, Michigan. 11 years old. Wow. So she's recently created a digital tool called Kindly, and it uses artificial intelligence to detect early signs of cyberbullying. So users enter like a word or a phrase, and Kindly tells them if it's bullying, and they have the option to edit before hitting send. And it's such a great goal because her, it's such a great project because her goal is not to punish, it's to help people rethink what they say, rather than saying you can't say that, it's you can choose, but here's what the intonations of what you want to say could be. So she wants to, part of her mission is to show how creating her own devices to solve the world's problems is just shifting to empower others to solve those problems too. Like, she can't end cyberbullying by herself, but she can empower other people to be more language conscious, which is really great. And it's sort of that, if I can do it, so can you, but I'm not mm-hmm. going to show you approach. Like, I'm not going to make you, I'm going to empower you approach.
Yeah.
And the other part of her goal is to show that scientists don't have to look like Albert Einstein or Bill Nye. They can look like kids. They can look like girls. They can look like minorities. I mean, again, she's 15 and she's already got two major invention accomplishments under her belt with massive practical day applications. So wanted to give her a shout out.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's not like a shame kind of thing, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, well, you know, you could say that, but alternatively, you could say this. And it's maybe mm-hmm. not so insensitive. Yeah, yeah, that's great. I need that. I need like that microchip in my brain. Like, I need something to tell me like, oh, you don't need to say that, or maybe say it like this.
Yeah. Kindly, but actually it's a chip in your brain.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant. Oh, cool. Wow. What else is she going to come up with? I love this.
I'm excited to see.
Yeah. I need to follow her on Instagram immediately. A daily yes. like boost of, I don't know.
Kid genius.
Yeah. It's so encouraging. It's inspirational, really, even though I'm significantly older than her.
But I think the cool thing is that it's not necessarily age, it's perspective.
Right.
Like, without our generation and this issues of cyberbullying, she would never have seen it as such a major issue. If it were new to her generation, she wouldn't have had that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to look at it too. Brilliant. Yeah. I have a lot of faith in this, in Generation Z. Like, I think they're going to really crush it. Like,
I'm hopeful too. They're already showing that they can step up.
Yeah. Like, just the kids that we've interviewed doing this, mm-hmm. like, it's incredible.
Cool. Yeah,
I'm here. I can't come up with those ideas, but I will encourage and support and do what I can to spread the word about what the 11-year-olds and 15-year-olds are doing.
Support is just as important.
Maybe a little not at all child-friendly, but Mardi Gras was yesterday. Today is Ash Wednesday. Yesterday was Fat Tuesday. So I'm going to come at you with some Mardi Gras fun facts because I don't really know a ton about it. So Mardi Gras itself is the final celebration in the carnival season that leads up to today, Ash Wednesday, the beginning of Lent. And technically, Mardi Gras is only Fat Tuesday. So Mardi Gras was only yesterday, even though I think of it as like a whole week of crazy part, like spring break, but make it February. So the carnival season in New Orleans officially kicks off on Twelfth Night, which is also known as Three Kings Day, which is also Epiphany, which is the 12th day after Christmas, which is like biblically in the Christian Bible, that's when the kings arrived. Anyway, all that. So from Twelfth Night to Fat Tuesday, there are over 70 parades held throughout the city of New Orleans. And like, I think of Mardi Gras as a 21 and up event, but what I learned is that there are actually family friendly celebrations in uptown New Orleans. Just don't go to the French Quarter where like we think of Mardi Gras. There are family-friendly events in other places. Also, the colors mean something. The purple, gold, green. Green means faith. Gold means power. Purple means justice. I think that's really cool and important to know. Also, like, I know I'm against single-use plastic and stuff, but the fact that on average, 25 million pounds of beads are thrown every year at Mardi Gras. 25 million pounds. That's not even a comprehensible number. Like, I can't even.
We're going to have to send our friends from Four Ocean to recover some of those beads and make truly Mardi Gras colored water bottles.
Well, and like, you see pictures of like just trash everywhere. And like, mm-hmm. how does that even get cleaned up? Well, it wasn't until 2019, 2 years ago, that the city of New Orleans installed gutter buddies. So they're like little grates that keep all the trash from flowing into the sewer system and clogging, because they would get clogs. It would cause flooding in already in New Orleans, which, like, hello, what are we doing? 2019, they installed these grates. So at least it's not getting, cool. you know, rushed.
It's a separate, it's an automatic separation system now.
Yeah. So yeah. That's great. Also, it's required by law for everyone riding a float to wear a mask. Not like what we're used to right now, but like the full-on carnival face covering mask. Like, think of like a Hunchback of Notre Dame, like those kinds of big masks. It is required by law. And if you're caught without a mask, your group is fined. And the point of the masks are so that you can, this is a quote, to escape society and class constraints. And I think that is brilliant. I love that. I'm here for that. Also,
I currently wear a mask to do that. So,
right. It's just disguised as my own face. but each float is organized by a crew, and each crew has a secret. This, I love this. They have a secret king and queen. And the secret king and queen organize a ball. So like at the end of Mardi Gras, each crew, secret king and queen, throws this ball, and it's like the social event of the year. And at the ball is when you find the identity of the king and the queen. Like, that's amazing. I'm all here for like a secret party thrown by secret people. Yes. Like, I love that.
That's so, I didn't know this. Yeah. I kind of just knew it as the traditional spring breaky tropey thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't know that in order to get beads, it's not what we're all thinking. It's you just have to yell something. There's like a phrase that's like, give me the beads, mister, or something like hilarious. It's not what we're all thinking. Spring break! Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just and picturing me walking up to some grumpy woman at a coffee shop like, give me the beads, mister. And she's like, okay, here you go.
Great. Have a great Mardi Gras. Excuse me? Yeah, it's wild. And my last fun fact is that celebrations like Mardi Gras, like the timeline and what it is and the purpose of it, can be traced all the way back to Nice, France, as early as 1294.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
this is a 700 year plus annual event.
Yeah. Incredible.
Wow. I thank you so much for sharing. I know very little about Mardi Gras, so thank you for all the fun facts.
I literally just knew like a spring break type situation, but that's not at all what it is. I mean, kind of a little bit, but
yeah. And I know about like king cake and king's cake, and I only know very topical stuff, but it's like we've done with other holidays on here. It's neat to do a deeper dive and sort of get a sense of what they're about.
Totally.
Yeah. My next topic is also, if you're very sensitive with your kids, maybe this is not for the 3-year-old. This is maybe my favorite article I've ever researched. The Lincolnshire Wildlife Center in Great Britain, they had to separate their five African gray parrots because they were swearing at guests.
Obsessed.
So, I just like, it's the best article. Like, even Ellen did a bit on the Ellen DeGeneres Show about this. It just like became such a major headline when it happened. So our pirate-mouthed friends are Billy, Eric, Tyson, Jade, and Elsie. And not only – it was like one of them learned how to curse and swear, and then they would encourage the other to curse and rally in expletive-filled rants at the guests. So the zoo's chief executive, Steve Nichols, said they're used to parrots swearing but not five at the same time and not encouraging each other. So like parrots might do it one off in like that sort of one off capacity. He said basically parrots tend to clam up outside when they're with the guests, but not this group. They would sort of use the laughter as motivation to go further, like kind of like a stand-up comedian.
Stop that.
Oh. Yep. And some of the children, like, and some of the people enjoyed the parrots telling them to, in so many words, F off, but not everyone did, especially people who have small children. So the parrots have been spread out to different areas of the zoo so they don't set each other off. And Steve said he hopes the parrots don't teach the other birds to swear because they have 250 birds and they can't afford to that many birds swearing at the guests. So if you want, you can go on their Instagram. It's at Lynx Wildlife Park. And you may have also heard about this group. They've got a parrot who went viral for singing If I Were a Boy, like pitch perfect If I Were a Boy. And it's just silly and fun. And like, really, this is the last thing you would think about because it's so atypical. So.
Wow. I like biggest fear of birds, but man, I want to be cussed out by a parrot.
Maybe that if it's amazing. Like separated by glass, you would feel more comfortable with this.
Yeah. And I don't know. I feel like maybe if it's talking to me, I can be like, no, you F off. Like,
I would watch you. I would want to watch you get in a fight with a bird. Like that would be really entertaining.
But like a verbal fight. If it touches me, I'm done.
You're done. So what are you looking forward to?
You kind of touched on it last week, just like spring is coming. I know it's the end of February, but that means March is coming. And I just am looking forward to going outside more. There was like a fluke day in January where it was like 54 degrees. So we went on a hike and then went to a brewery and we sat outside and tasted new beers and it felt quote unquote normal. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to being able to go back outside and go on these hikes and get myself moving more than just like sitting on the rowing machine while I'm watching Bob's Burgers every day, like going out, mm-hmm. getting fresh some fresh air
is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and you're tasting beer. So you're engaging all your senses, which we've talked about is such a helpful thing for.
Yes. And I will gladly go on a hike if I know, okay, I'm going to get a Pilsner after this. We'll make it.
I like that.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to?
No more football. There's no baseball. So my friend got me into basketball. So I'm not watching every day, but I am watching some more Sixers game while the poor Eagles figure out how to reconstruct their roster and coaching staff.
Oh, gosh. Good luck.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago when they announced that Doug Peterson was fired, my cousin is a long-suffering Jets fan and texted me, "Welcome to the cellar bench. We've been keeping it warm for you." And I couldn't even think of a snarky response because I just felt bad.
That's fair.
But yeah, I've been watching some more basketball and I don't know. I like sports. I like learning about sports. I'm not a particularly athletic person. So I like watching people who are really good at sports. It's kind of like escapism.
Yeah, it's not, it's like you said, escapism. It's like a turn my brain off, but I can be entertained by something I can't do. And I will never, I'm never mm-hmm. going to attempt a slam dunk because I know that physics is not in my favor for that.
Even fifth graders are taller than me. Like I know my odds are slim, so.
We love all forms of happy news and happenings.
Be sure to send us your own day-to-day happy news, cute pet stories, kids saying the darndest things, whatever you're up to, we love it all.
Email us at hnnpodcast@gmail.com. Also, follow us on social media at hnnpodcast for happy news throughout the week.
And be sure to subscribe to us through Patreon where you'll get exclusive content and more.
Until next time, I'm Kristen.
And I'm Shayna.
Have a happy week.